We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning, Grinders. Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender at Blender HD. If you're gonna follow me on Twitter, and it's Friday, March 8th. We'll be taking a look at the MMA slate for tomorrow. UFC 299, 14 fights, and I believe that they're all still on. The weigh-ins have already happened, so we should be good with all the fights. And joining me, like he does every Friday for MMA, it's the king of the takedowns, the guy that likes to hit the nuts here on Roto Grinders. It's John Breslin, aka Squirrel Patrol. Sorry, we're a little bit late. My internet is going in and out.
I was gonna say we're just waiting for CJ Vergara to weigh in again. That was the delay, but the fight's officially on, so we were able to go live once he agreed to take a 30% cut to his purse. So yeah, all fights are on. So good card.
And something new that we're doing here on Friday, right? First off, obviously, hit those thummy thumbs. You know how much I like those. Hit the thummy thumb button. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. We got NBA later today on the channel. Crunch time, Grinders live. But on Fridays now, because we love alliteration. I love alliteration. We're running Freebie Fridays. Freebie Fridays, where one piece of content across the board here on Roto Grinders will be free to access to all. A piece of premium. You don't even have to be a premium member, right? If you do, you want to click on that link in the description, get $10 off your first month. So we're going to spin the wheel and see which piece of content. Well, here are the choices. You got the core plays, the if-then projections, Lineup HQ, Sim Labs, Fantasy, the Pick'em tool, right? And this is for all sports. So, like, if you're playing NHL tonight, I mean, you could use Lineup HQ for NHL or NBA, or make your MMA lineups, right, for tomorrow. Sim Labs for NBA tonight, right? So it's not just, you know, it's not just for MMA or it's not just for NBA. I guess the if-then projections are just for NBA. So let's spin this wheel and see what the Freebie Friday is. You're in the club. It looks like up. I'm lagging. Up. We're here. Looks like the Fantasy Pick'em tool. There you go. So we'll send that over to, you know, whoever needs to change that access protocol on the site. And now you get to get the fantasy pick'em tool. That's for Prize Picks, Underdog, DraftKings Pick 6. You get that. I use that pick'em tool. Okay? So you can go there, and that gets updated throughout the day. So if you want to compare our projections here at RotoGrinders to the numbers that are at Prize Picks, Underdog, DraftKings Pick 6, for all sports, NHL, NBA, whatever, you could use that today for nothing. And if you like it, you know, get the props and pick 'em package. You don't even need a premium membership. You just get the props and pick 'em package, and you can use that all the time. So there you go. So, John, we got a big contest tomorrow, right? 200K plus the first UFC 299 and 14 fights. So, you know, me and you, as the large field GPP players, we love being able to build lineups that may not be as duplicated. But the thing that stands out on this card in general is that I think finishes may be at a premium.
Okay. Interesting. So, well, there is one guy that's got a really high chances of getting a finish, which is like the 6'7" Taekwondo guy making his UFC debut, Des Pain. So he's got like a 60%, over 60% chance I'm seeing of getting a first round win. He's like a 6'7", former, I think, bronze medal Olympic winner in Taekwondo. And he's probably not like a future UFC champion or anything. But I think he's going to beat the snot out of Josh Parisian. looks like Parisian was having trouble making the heavyweights. Like it came in at 266 and he's like sweating. I think there'll be a finish there, but I agree. It's weird to have that fight then because we've got 2 5-round fights that could both be pretty high scoring. So I do actually think it's going to be a little bit of a difficult card to get like a really unique lineup because I think a lot of people are going to be playing those 5-round fights. But I also think that's the right thing to do because I think they're going to be high scoring. But yeah, other than that, there's not like a, we've seen like cards, especially the fight night cards, where maybe one of the fighters isn't like as up with like professional training as the other fighter, and you've seen these like kind of outsized inside the distance lines, outsized like round one finish lines. This card it's more competitive fights, which is good, but yeah, probably not as many finishes.
Right, because we take a look here, especially in the mid range. I mean, more than half the fights are favored to go the distance, so I think. I mean, we'll start breaking this down from, looking at the 5-round fights first, then taking a look at, the kind of the expensive options. Then we'll take a look at, what value. But overall, to me, I view this as, I'll be making 75 to 100 lineups. I view this as, I feel like I'm targeting fights. And there may be fights where I barely have, I almost feel like I could safely X them out and just like, if they beat me, they beat me type of thing. It's just like the differences between like on a 14 fight card, it's not as difficult to get uniquer, right? It doesn't have to be unique, but under 5 dupes, under 10 dupes. And I'm not sure if I want to start pairing some of these high, low probability ITD fighters like together. Like it feels like there are certain fights on the slate where can I take a shot on one of them, but then the rest of the lineup could be kind of like I could be a little bit chalkier because I think those fights are going to go significantly less owned. But the 5-round fights, we got O'Malley versus Vera, we got Saint Denis versus Poirier. Saint Denis is -160 inside the distance as a -210 favorite. O'Malley is a 255, -255 favorite, but a +225 inside the distance, which kind of makes sense with his style against Marlon Vera. You got the name value of Poirier, but I mean, Benoit Saint Denis, essentially, just high pace. I mean, think of like a miniature version of like Marab, not as skilled. And then you have Vera who probably doesn't win a decision, but I mean, is live to end the fight at any time. How are you treating these 5-round fights? Are we just going along with ownership? I mean, to me, it make to me, I think St. Denis has more of a chance of putting up a score that you'll need to have than O'Malley.
Yeah, I think that's true. I agree with that. I was looking at St. Denis, like, you know, game log basically is, you know, fight history. And I was thinking, like, you know, if he doesn't get the first round finish, like if he doesn't get the early finish, maybe he doesn't score that well. And then I was looking at his, like, his pace. I'm like, oh no, like he's got like these monster scores because he is getting like first and second round finishes. But even if he doesn't, the pace that he's putting up is going to be really high scoring. And it's terrifying to think what his score could be if it goes five rounds. And like Poirier isn't a bad fighter. Like that fight might not end early. So Benoit St. Denis could end up putting up a really high score. I kind of like St. Denis to win. I kind of like him to put up a really high score. I agree. Like Sean O'Malley, he scores, you know, some really high paced, high points, you know, high DraftKings point totals in some of his fights in the past. I'm not sure if that's as like likely to be replicated, I guess, in this fight. But I think both of them could score very well. But I agree. I'd side with Benoit St. Denis if I have to pick one of them.
Right. From a pricing perspective, Benoit St. Denis is 8,900. O'Malley's 9,200. So obviously, O'Malley needs to do more at his price in order to make that optimal lineup. And obviously, later in the day, you'll see for premium members, we'll have the simulation output out. And it's something that me and John look at, you know, pretty much religiously on how we build our lineups, on how often the fighters end up making the optimal. I'm going to guess that O'Malley's not, I don't think for out of the five round fighters, I think as far as making the optimal, I think it's going to be St. Denis 1, Poirier 2, Vera 3, O'Malley 4. And I'm not saying, but I don't think O'Malley's going to come in like 10% chance.
No.
But it'll be significantly lower. Because you got guys like Almabayev, Gamrot, Despaigne, and then you got obviously Kyler Phillips and Marina Moroz, who I'm maybe not as worried about. But, like, it's so much easier to fit in lineups with an $8,900 fighter where you're still playing another one of these 9K fighters. But when you play Sean O'Malley in your lineup, that $300 difference squeezes. You know, the more and more favorites that win and less underdogs win, O'Malley's chances of making the optimal go lower and lower.
Yeah, I agree. One of the issues, though, is I like O'Malley to win this fight. I don't know if it's like games, but like Marlon Vera looked terrible on the scales. And I don't know that that always means something, but like he needed like the box and stuff to like to make weight. And he was like, you know, and he looked like gaunt. He was confused coming off the scale, which direction to go in. I never like that. I like it when they get off the scale and they know what direction to, you know, to walk off stage. So I think I would not be surprised if the line actually like widens a little bit in O'Malley's favor. So I think O'Malley's going to win the fight. So I don't know. It's going to be tough. I think the five round fighters do have an edge, but you start to run out of roster spots, right? Like, and then if you want to get like this pain has got like the 2/3 chance of a first round finish and he's not the most expensive fighter on the card, but then, you know, then you start to run out of salary quickly. You start to run out of roster spots quickly. And then the other fighters like priced at really at like 8,500 and above, you know, you start to like maybe see very low ownership. If everyone's going with like this pain and then the 2 5-round favorites.
Well, let's talk about the 9K fighters. And, you know, Robeles Despaigne, you mentioned before, he's 4-0. He's only had 4 professional fights.
Yes.
The bronze medalist, Taekwondo, which is typically not the best base for MMA.
Yeah.
His 3 out of his 4 fights lasted less than 12 seconds. So, like, the sample size.
Not a lot of tape to watch, yeah.
The thing is, John, nothing against the guy, okay? This is purely not personal. Josh Parisian may be the dumbest fighter that I've ever seen in the UFC. Like, is Parisian bad? Yes, but he's still a UFC fighter. He's had plenty of UFC fights. The thing is that, like, it seems so obvious here that as long as he could avoid the first couple of strikes, he should just take this guy down because he's coming from Taekwondo. It's heavyweight. He's not getting up. Thing is that Parisian has been in these types of spots against one-dimensional strikers and not done that. And just has no problem just walking right into punches, has no gas tank. But it's hard for me. I know the betting line. The betting line right now, minus 295 inside the distance. Minus 330. Like, essentially, he's minus 330 favorite. 77% win probability. 75% of that is inside the distance, and 71% of that is inside the first round. And that's small of a sample size, but is this guy's going to be 50% owned on a 14-fight card? He could go out and win. I mean, his win condition is not grappling-based. So, like, outside of the first minute, it's quite possible that maybe he scores 105 and, you know, he knocks out Josh Parisian, you know, the minute and 10 seconds in. And I think I could be okay. But like I said before, finishes could be at a premium this card. So maybe even 105 at 9,300 is good enough to win. So, like, all these variables bouncing around. And then it feels like to me, John, my style of play is give me 8 to 10% owned Josh Parisian. And, like, dude, you're going to not only knock off, like, I think if Parisian wins this fight, he's probably going to be optimal, right?
Yeah.
I don't see this fight being a 15-minute fight and Parisian, unless he lays on top of him for three rounds. And if he does that, he probably scores well enough for 6,900 in a decision. I don't see it lasting that long. It just, how do you trust a guy with such a small sample size and such a limp? Like, it's a window of scoring like 125 with his style, and then a style that traditionally it's like you're relying on like four strike. Like, it's not volume. It's like, does he hit a head kick or a punch out of the six punches that he throws? And does that knock the other guy out?
I think the answer to that question is probably yes. because, like, there is a body composition difference between these two guys. Like, I was watching the weigh-ins. Despain, 6'7" and in excellent shape. Parisian is not in good shape. is not in good shape. I don't think either one of these guys expects or is planning or is thinking of the possibility of this fight going outside the first round. So I do think it'll probably end in the first round. I think the question is, like, Despain just doesn't have, like, the UFC experience and, like, or skill set even, right? Like, he's got a totally different skill set than, like, the kind of fights he's going to be in. I don't think it will matter with my estimate, my layman's estimate of what the difference in their athleticism probably is. Despain is a former, like, Olympic medalist, right? I think it was 2012, but Parisian is being sent in here to lose, to give Despain a win, so that then they can roll out this kind of, like, tall, 6'7" former Olympic medalist into some other fight that, and it's on the pay-per-view for a reason, like on the prelims of a pay-per-view for a reason. I think Despain's going to get the win here. I think it's probably going to be early. And even if it's not early, like, I think it'll be within the first round. And so he's going to be putting up points. And it's a difficult thing. Because if he does lose, right? Like, if Persian wins, you're going to feel like such an idiot. Like, this guy doesn't even, like, fight UFC. Why was I picking Despain at, like, 50% ownership? I just think there's a very good chance that what we expect to happen happens. Despain's going to put up a pretty high score. I agree that if you aren't putting Despain in a lineup, like, you should strongly consider Josh Parisian at his price, because if Parisian's getting a win at that price, and again, it would probably be a first round win, at least an early win, or maybe a worst case, like a second round win where he's getting a ton of control time just laying on top of him. But I think Despain's going to win here. Then, you're if you're taking the 2 5-round fights, you know, either side and into Spain, now you got 3 more roster spots and not a lot of salary.
And also not a lot of options. You'll be duping with, you know, 80, 100 people at a time. Above to Spain, we got Almabayev and we got Gamrot. Almabayev, these are the 2 biggest favorites on the slate. Minus 575 Almabayev over Vergara. Gamrot is minus 455 over Dos Anjos, who has name value, but if we saw in his last fight, I think he's kind of fallen off a cliff a bit. Obviously, Gamrot has the grappling upside for DraftKings scoring, but only plus 240 inside the distance. Most of the time, he's winning decisions. He's winning them decisively on the ground, which does well for his, I mean, does well for DraftKings scoring, but unless he completely wrecks Dos Anjos for 3 rounds like that, I mean, Gamrot typically doesn't score well. I mean, typically, he does perfectly fine. Like, when he's in the mid-price and he scores 95 points, you're pretty happy. You're like, okay, that's pretty good. At a $9,400 price tag, I'm not sure. And then you got Almabayev at minus 135. Probably similar game plan to CJ Vergara. But that fight is much more likely to end via a submission or like a grounded pound finish. Because, I mean, essentially, if this fight stays on its feet, it's a dud, and it's more on the side of Vergara. But on the ground, I mean, you have to assume that Almabayev, you know, is very live for the submission. It just, when does that submission come? And does it come with enough control time or enough ground strikes that he pays off a $9,500 price tag? If you were not playing Despaigne or O'Malley, because I don't think you could play like one of these guys and a higher price. I mean, you can. You have to screw it. You would have to be playing like a Vera Munoz type. I mean, you can. Which one of these guys would you prefer? Do you prefer the guy that is more likely to finish early? Or would you rather side with the guy that more likely racks up points? And if he does get a finish, I mean, if Gamrot gets a finish the way that he wrestles, I mean, he's going to be the one that's going to have the highest score on the slate. It typically doesn't happen that often. And he's facing Rafael Dos Anjos, who, albeit being older, I mean, he's fought the best fighters in the division for years.
Yeah. So it's interesting, yeah, because I was listening to Liam's stuff. He's the real UFC X's and O's guy, and he kind of likes Dos Anjos in this spot. I would, if I'm choosing between Almabayev and Gamrot, I think I'd go with Almabayev. I think he's got the better chance for an early finish. And I think like CJ Vergara, just missed weight again. I just think Almabayev's gonna win this fight. And I have much more confidence in that for a similar line than for Gamrot winning. Gamrot, and especially in terms of like DFS, Gamrot's 2 fights last year, I think, had about 85 points in both of them. He attempted like 18 takedowns. That's a lot of takedowns. Like, and if he was like getting those takedowns and like chain wrestling the guy's getting back up and then he's taking him back down, that's one thing, because that's racking up points. This is just seems like he has a lot of unsuccessful takedowns. So like it seems like he could be high scoring. But he's not getting the takedowns consistently and then letting the guy back up and then taking him back down again to like drain his cardio. He's just faced guys that are not going down as easily as his talent, is able to take them down.
The fights that I'm most interested in are all the close fights in the mid range, because yeah. I think not all of them, but most of them. Michelle Pereira versus Michael Olajechuk, Jack Della Maddalena versus Gilbert Burns, Jan Kudalaba versus Felipe Lins, and Curtis Blaydes versus Jelton Almeida. I think the 2 mid-range fights that I'm more likely to avoid are Holland Page. Most likely that's a fight. I mean, Holland's plus 200 inside the distance as a favorite. Most likely that fight plays out at range. You know, very similar style fighters. You know, they both tend to fight with their hands down, but they typically are far away from each other, far away enough that it'll be a lot of playing with their food. So on a 14 fight card, I think there are better options, better fights to target. I also think Peter Yan versus Song Yadong. I mean, I think that fight is one of the ones that are most likely to go the distance. And it's a pick'em. So it's like, yeah, get the right fighter is hard because it's close. And then most likely it doesn't end inside the distance. So the winner of this fight scores 70 points, most likely. Probably avoid it, especially with the name value. People look, oh, Peter Yan, I'm going to play Peter Yan. I don't know about that. But all these other fights, like, let's take a look at the very mid-range, the Blaydes-Almeida fight. I mean, it's hard to see this one going to decision. The question comes in, I think overall, I mean, Almeida's a physical beast. But Curtis Blaydes, I mean, Almeida's been facing guys that, you know, don't have the wrestling pedigree that Blaydes has. So I'm not sure that Almeida's going to be able to just, like, smoke him on the ground. But the issue with Blaydes has been in his past couple of fights is that he hasn't really been wrestling much. He's been trying to, he's been striking more. And I mean, I know Sergey Pavlovich is, has a power punch, but I mean, Blaydes has been knocked out by other guys before that he gets into these striking battles with limited defense and no chin. Is Almeida, I mean, Almeida's not a technical striker. So it's like, Blaydes just has to avoid some flailing shot. I feel like the winner of this fight at these prices scores well. I just don't know which side it's going to be because I think there's a big step up in competition for Jelton Almeida.
It is, but yeah. So this is the exact range I want to target. You know, basically, you started like naming it off, probably from like the 8600, like Jack Della, Maddalena, maybe Pereira. Down and each of their opponents, but actually kind of like the cheaper fighter in almost every fight. I think if some of these like cheap guys win, like you might need every bit of salary on this card. So like if some of these guys, like even like Michael Page at 7,700, I agree. I like Page at 7,700 because like if he wins a little bit of a lower paced fight, you know, at 7,700, that's more feasible for him to land on the winning lineup than like Kevin Holland winning a low paced fight at 8,500. But yeah, and then in terms of that, the Blaydes Almeida fight, I kind of like Almeida a lot. I think he's got like six UFC fights and they're all over 100 DK points. It is a step up in competition. Blaydes just hasn't seemed to do well in his recent fights. I mean, I guess. You know, he lost to Sergey Pavlovich and he beat Tom Aspinall and it looks like a great score. But Aspinall like ripped his knee apart. Like it was a non-contact injury, I think, with 15 seconds into the fight. So that was a big score for Blaydes. But if you remove that from his record, it's more like, you know, he just has one loss to Sergey Pavlovich in the last, you know, 2 years. So like, and that's his only like UFC outcome. So Almeida is a fighter that has been putting up tremendous scores, and he even won. Like his last fight was a 5-round decision, so he can do that against Derek Lewis. Yeah, so I like Almeida on this fight. I'm surprised he's the cheaper fighter. I'm surprised the line isn't wider. If I had to like bet on Almeida, I will be putting Almeida into my lineup. So at 8,000, because I think he can put up a high score in a number of different ways, and I you know, that's a great price. And I'll certainly be playing some Curtis Blaydes as well. I don't think it's like a thing where Almeida is going to like trounce him and is going to win, you know, 80% of the time or anything like that. I just, if you're giving me even money, I'm going to take Almeida in that fight. And if you're giving me an extra $200 DFS, I'm going to take Almeida.
The thing about these mid-range fights, just to make it clear for people, like we're targeting these fights for ceiling. None of these, I mean, the floors of these guys are really low. So like you mentioned, like Pereira Olajechuk. I prefer the Olajechuk at 7,500 because I mean, he's plus 250 inside the distance and he could knock Pereira out. You know, if he doesn't do that, he's dead. I mean, like it simply comes down to that. Like Olajechuk ain't going to score well in a 3-round decision, right? If it gets, he probably doesn't win a 3-round decision, but if it gets to that, yeah, you got one round. Basically, Olajechuk, you got one round, 7,500. Can he score 100 points? Michelle Pereira has a little bit more paths. because of, you know, he submission grappling, stuff like that. But he's also 8,700. So he has to do a lot more of that. And the same could be said when you, I mean, Michael Page versus Kevin Holland. It's like a 90-point win by Page is doable at 7,700, but not so much doable at 8,500. The Blades Almeida is right in the middle, so I don't think it really matters. But you got Della Maddalena versus Gilbert Burns. I think we're low on Burns' ownership. I think this fight is going to be, I think Maddalena's ownership is going to be higher also. I find this, this could easily be a binary outcome fight. Della Maddalena is like, his defensive wrestling has really not been really tested, right? Like, and the thing is that Gilbert Burns is someone that when it hits that second round, you're wondering, does this guy have a gas tank? And like, is Gilbert Burns going to be able to attempt 20 takedowns against Della Maddalena? I'm not sure if he's able to, but the thing is that can he get one takedown? And if he could get one takedown, successful takedown against Della Maddalena, he may not need 19 more because he may just submit him on the mat right there. And if he can't get the takedowns, Gilbert Burns, not very good defensively on his feet, could get completely waxed by JDM. And JDM gets the first round TKO win. Not safe for floors, but I mean, obviously, from a scoring perspective, I'll take the cheaper fighter, especially one with the grappling upside, because even if Della Maddalena wins in the second round after like almost losing in the first round on the ground, like his score is not going to be good because he didn't score much in the first round anyway. So like Della Maddalena, in order to score 100 points, probably only has 5 minutes also.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons, like on my like Excel spreadsheets and dashboard and stuff, I always take the first round win odds. Like you brought up like Olajuwon, that like, yeah, if, I mean, he's probably, you know, first round or bust. So like, I want to see like, if I'm determining like an ownership percentage that I want to play this guy at, what's his chances of winning in the first round? You know, I basically want to own him maybe at that rate and depending on the price, like higher or lower. Yeah, the Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della and Maddalena fight. I agree. Like I like Della Maddalena to win the fight, which is, you know, reflected in the odds. I like Gilbert Burns as a DFS play more at 7,700. Della Maddalena had three fights last year, which is a lot. And I think he won all three of them. But like one of them was like Basil Hafez, who like came in as a late replacement. And I think Jack Della made a lot. Maddalena was like a minus 500 or minus 600 or something and kind of barely won a decision. Like Hafez looked really good against Della Maddalena. And then who else did he fight later in the year? Kevin Holland. And again, like had like a 70 something point DK win, which is like, okay, but it's not an 8,500. But you know, Della Maddalena does have higher scoring wins in his game log, you know, before last year. So I'm certainly not going to have like none of him, but I'm probably going to have more Gilbert Burns than Della Maddalena, even though I think Maddalena is probably going to win the fight.
The last one in the mid range, the ITD and round one lines are not out for this, or yeah. At least not on the major sports books that I look at. It's a minus 120 plus 100 fight. Jan Kudalaba, Felipe Lins. I don't see this fight making it to the scorecards. But I also don't trust either fighter. I don't even trust, dude, it's a Felipe Lins fight. I don't even trust that this fight even happens after lock, right? Lins has pulled out a fight. I mean, obviously he's pulled out earlier than, you know, not just the day of. And Jan Kudalaba is a DFS goldmine. The way that he fights for scoring. The problem is that he does a lot. He's like, wow, he got 36 points in the first round. And then a minute into the second round gets knocked out. like he's high pace, not very defensive. He could wrestle. He strikes powerful. He's not a good fighter. Felipe Lins ain't a good fighter either, but Felipe Lins doesn't have much, like much volume. Like, I think Felipe Lins has 5 minutes to get 100 points in this fight. I think Cutelaba has more paths to 100-plus points, but ain't trust. I mean, dude, he always ends up being popular and loses. So, like, how owned is he going to be? I think his ownership on the slate may actually be lower than he would be on a normal, like, if this was a 12-fight night card, Cutelaba at 8,400 would probably be like 40%+ owned. But because we have all these other mid-range fights here and 2 5-rounders, I think that comes down considerably. And if you've been playing UFC DFS, you probably have like PTSD at some point from playing Jan Cutelaba. And you're like, okay, I played him the last 3 slates. He lost both all 3 times. I'm done with this guy. So are you still more inclined to play the cheaper fighter in Lins?
I think so. I noticed the same thing that you noticed, which is that the inside, like the distance lines, like the first round finish lines are not out yet for this fight. It's a rescheduled fight, I think, from October. And looking at the article, it does say that Lins is withdrawn from 7 UFC fights, and including this last fight, I think, was canceled after lock. Like, Lins was sick, you know, pulled the Raul Rosas before Rosas even did it. So definitely going to make you nervous, but I agree that it could be a really sneaky fight. Like, it's almost like playing a late guy or a questionable player in NBA when there's no late swap, right? Like, I think this fight could get canceled still, even though both guys made weight. But if they don't, it could be a fight you need to have. And I think it's going to be a little bit of a sneaky fight because, like, not all of that stuff that people want to look at for the fight is out yet. We don't have that information. But like, under 1.5 rounds is -150. So that's the kind of thing that I want to see in a fight. Even if I don't have, like, the inside the distance lines on the individual fighters, like, people do not expect this fight to go 1.5 rounds. I think even if it does, like, the guys are like heavy, you know, fast paced enough that it could score well. So I'm probably going to pick a side here on a lot of my lineups. I still prefer the Felipe Lins side, even though he's probably the fighter more likely to pull out, of the fight, but yeah, he's 7,800. So, you know, has to do less. I'm going to go with Felipe Lins in a good portion of my lineup. Probably going to try to end up over the field on him. You know, from the guys that know fighting, they've said that, like, if he shows up in shape, he's a fighter that has a, you know, very good chance of winning the fight. Like, he's one of the guys you want to see on the scales, and I think he looks pretty good on the scale today. So I'm probably going to end up with some Felipe Lins in my lineups and maybe a Scroll Patrol's takedown fighter for the article.
So in the takedown article, a lot of times you're talking about, you know, lower-owned underdogs. So outside, I mean, what would you, if we consider the 5-round fights, okay, rank the five underdogs in order while also considering their ownership. So, like, it's like, oh, yeah, you'd like Marlon Vera, but, I mean, if he's going to be 33% owned, that would knock him down. So, like, what? Maybe not top five, but top three. I just want to include the 5-round fights in that because I think the 5-round underdogs are actually going to be lower owned on this slate because it's a 14-fight card than they would be on a like an 11-fight fight night card. So getting a 5-round fighter that wins a decision at these prices, like, is worth it even probably at 25 or 30% owned. So to me, that's still under-owned enough. So who would you be prioritizing for large field GPPs as far as low ownership considered underdogs?
So actually, I think both of the 5-round underdogs should be owned at least at their, well, should be owned at about their win chances of winning the fight. And actually, I think we actually have Vera projected at ownership above his chances of winning the fight. So I think I'm seeing like we've got about 34% projected ownership. And he's got about a 30% chance of winning the fight. I actually don't think it's impossible he ends up on the winning lineup in a loss even. If this fight is paced in that direction. I probably like Poirier a little bit better than Vera, considering the ownership, because I think either one of them lands on the winning lineup in a win. So I'd rather have Poirier than Vera. She's got a better chance of winning the fight. Outside of like the main event fighters, probably like Pedro Munhoz. He's only 7,100. I think he can win this fight. I don't think that he's necessarily going to be that high scoring, but I guess 7,100, he's got like a 34% chance of winning the fight. It's not bad. I think like outside of the main event fighters or the five round underdogs, I think I like Munhoz the best. Then it starts to get a little bit thin after that. I don't really like any of the super cheap fighters other than Munhoz and the main event underdogs. Like CJ Vergara, I don't think he's going to win the fight. I guess if he does win the fight, like he's got a really good chance of, you know, landing on the winning lineup, but it's an under 20% chance. So I'll probably roster him at less than 20%. Parisian, I think you have to have, you know, strongly consider him in non-Despain lineups. But again, I just think he has almost no chance to win this fight. And then Joanne Calderwood is interesting. She is actually pretty high paced, and I actually think she's a really good cash game play. Like for 7,200, you know, that fight has a pretty good chance of going the distance, and Calderwood like lands significant strikes at a pretty good pace. So she's actually got a pretty good floor, and I would consider her definitely for cash games if you need to go in that direction. But then again, she might not be great for cash games because you have 2 5-round underdogs to pick from. So yeah, I know that's kind of my breakdown of the absolute cheapest fighters.
Right. For me, at the current ownership projections that we have, I would say number one for me would be probably Poirier, just by default. 2 would be Burns. 3 would be Parisian, just for leverage.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if he wins, he's going to, not only is 50% of the lineup's going to be busted, but you're not going to be having to compete against not many people also, because 40% of the lineups also don't have him either. Then it gets dicey. Then I guess there, that Ola, I mean, to me, Ola J. Chuck is a nice, I mean, if he could come in at under 20% owned,
yeah,
I would like that. But you just have to realize when you watch that fight, it's like you're rooting for the first 5 minutes. And if he doesn't get there in the first, like he ain't going to score well on a decision. So you don't have to worry about that. And everyone else is like you can't, we haven't mentioned like Almeida or Blades, like whoever is the underdog in that. I mean, 8,000, when you look at lineup construction on a card where all the favorites win, like the fighters that matter are the highest scoring fighter that's 7,700 or lower, right? So until a fighter 7,700 or lower wins, like the slate really hasn't even started. Like who's going to be in the optimal lineup hasn't really even like kind of started yet. So that's why I don't consider like Linz or Song Yudong or Almeida to really like they're in the same range of the fighters that you're playing Kudalaba, Jan Blade. Like you need to play someone low 7,700 or lower in order to make a valid lineup in general, using 50K in salary. So I think you get it. Cause I mean, if you go by pricing, you'd say like Almeida would be number one on your list because he's the priced underdog and he's actually favored now.
Yeah. I actually just looking at the ownership, like CJ Vergara, we've got it less than 4%, which I'm not sure I've ever seen before. And he has almost no chance of winning the fights. And I just kind of trashed him, but he's only 6,700. Like he should be higher owned than that. But I do think that's more of a thing if you're doing a bunch of lineups. Like if you're doing, you know, 50, 100, 150 lineups, like you need to get some CJ Vergara in there at more than 4%. But like if you're only doing like 10 lineups, you maybe don't want to have him in there at all. But like he's going to have a much higher chance of landing on the optimal lineup than 4%. If he's got about an 18% chance of winning the fight at 6,700. And it's not totally impossible. Some, you know, 3-round grappling fest with like reversals and stuff like that, that he ends up, you know, putting up a 40-point score in a loss that doesn't look terrible.
So how about on the high end? So we're going to go to the favorites now. So we'll, give me two lower owned favorites, right? And now we're not, we're throwing out ownership, right? So it's not like, oh, I'll play Saint Denis even at 50% ownership or Despaigne at 50% ownership. It's like, no, we want two fighters that are less than 25% owned that are favorites that you may be over the field on. You're more willing to take a shot. Because I got two of them.
So under 25% owned favorites. I think Peter Yan, is, like, we've got him at 15%. So if he wins that fight, I mean, he's not like super high scoring, but he's not low scoring. 8,300, I think, is a good price for him if he wins that fight. So I'd be interested in being over the field there. Let's see. Macy Barber is only 11%. yeah, I think you got to own Macy Barber at more than 11%. I know you like the Ugly Women's MMA. I think Barber is going out there with bad intentions. I don't, like, the sharp people I've listened to don't really like her in this fight. But yeah, I mean, she's the favorite, right? So at 11%, I think you got to be over the field on that. So I see you're nodding in agreement. So
I'm agreeing with your point, but you got the wrong woman, right?
Oh, Moroz.
the two that I see that I would want to play are Marina Moroz at 9,000 and Michelle Pereira at 8,700. Michelle Pereira is plus 130 inside the distance currently, and his style is, I mean, he's primarily going to win probably by submission. I want to, if finishes are at a premium, I want to target low-owned knockout artists or low-owned submission grapplers that either could submit someone in the first round or have a dominant grappling decision victory in three rounds. And like Pereira, like Olajechuk, like, dude, the dude has no ground game. So like Pereira, if he lands takedowns, he can put up 100 points in a decision. Like, he could also submit him in the first round. So there's a lot more paths to a lot of points. And Marina Moroz is the same way. Now, I don't think Joanne Calderwood or Joanne Wood is like a pushover at all. I think you're right. Before it most likely goes the distance, and Joanne Wood is probably a good cash play because even in a loss, Joanne Wood will probably still have 55 points or 50 points or something to give you enough down there. But Marina Moroz's style, I mean, a lot of fights she's too patient, but I mean, she has wrestling ups. I mean, I compare it to like Macy Barber versus Caitlin Chookagian or Sermonara, whatever it is. I think Macy Barber is just less trustworthy. Like, can she wrestle? Yeah. Will she wrestle? Who knows? Right. This is more likely is going to look a lot closer than probably should. And Macy Barber gets like 82 points in a win. And there you go. If Marina Moroz just says, I feel like wrestling today because I definitely have a wrestling advantage, I mean, she'll just go and just lay on top. I mean, like, just three rounds of submission attempts and six, seven takedowns. Now, is that the likely outcome? No. But, I mean, I'm looking for those types of fighters at low ownership than you know, playing, to me, like playing Kevin Holland at 8,500, where what am I really relying on? Like, I feel like the paths to victory in these fights, or even the Yan Song fight, it's like outside of the first round, these guys can't score. I mean, like, either it's a first round knockout or not. And if I'm going to play a guy like that, I have to do it at low ownership. And the fact that like Peter Yan is plus 375 inside the distance, that's a 21% implied probability. Marina Moroz is plus 170 inside the distance. Michelle Pereira is plus 130. And like, I look at these ITD numbers and I go, if the ITD number, if I'm seeing anything under plus 200, if I'm seeing plus 100, you know, plus 150, and I see these guys that are under 20% owned, like, that's like twice the likelihood of winning inside the distance for almost like for no ownership. Like, Macy Barber's 27%. So I can get on board a Macy Barber lineup. It's not like I have nothing against Macy Barber. I just think Marina Moroz has more paths in a decision the way that she fights and scoring 100-plus points than Macy Barber does.
Yeah. I can see going with Moroz over Macy Barber because they're about similar price. I mean, there's a $200 difference. And looking, you're right, like Moroz actually does have like a 100-point DK decision. So, like, yeah, she's got multiple paths to get there. She can, like, if she wins a decision and can get 100 points at 9,000, where there might not be a lot of finishes, I can see her being, like, sneaky, and she should be owned, like, you know, above her projected ownership. Peter Yan, though, is only, like, 8,300. So that's, like, a substantial price difference. So there's, like, he has to do less than Moroz. I'd probably rather have Peter Yan. Like, I'd rather have more Peter Yan than Moroz, if that makes sense. Just, and I know what you're saying, that, like, the inside the distance line is actually, like, better on Moroz. But Peter Yan can actually... Yeah, at 8,300, he has to do so much less than Moroz at 9,000.
Right. So your attitude is. So John, your attitude. Clarified. Add additional context. Moroz lineups are. It's going to be much harder to play someone like Rebelis Despaigne or Sean O'Malley or Benoit Saint Denis. So, yeah. Like to you, you'd rather play the Saint Denis, the O'Malleys, the Despaigne's, like the chalkier, higher scoring likelihood fighters up there, and then play a low-owned Peter Yan and a low-owned Pedro Munoz type of lineup, then go, well, I'll eat the chalk in the mid-range, right? Play Poirier down there and then end up, instead of playing Despaigne or Benoit Saint Denis, I'm playing Marina Moroz as my, like, low-owned play in that. Like, and I don't think I would build lineups like that. Like, to me, Moroz lineups would still have probably one of Despaigne or Saint Denis, because I don't feel like, I think Moroz comes in at like 12, 14%. I mean, like somewhere like that, where I could eat the owner. I mean, I could play 2 5-round fighters in that lineup. Like, it feels like I could easily play an O'Malley, Poirier, Despaigne. I mean, maybe I can't get a Despaigne in that lineup, but like something like that much easier. But I would not be using Moroz as like, well, I'm going to play all the chalky underdogs and then play Moroz I'm going to play Moroz, Barber, Pereira, right, as my favorites, and then get and eat the chalk on the underdog. I don't think that's the right way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're going to need some of the 5-round favorites. If you pick Moroz, I think you're much more likely to end up having to take like Vera or Dustin Poirier. So, yeah, I don't know. It should be a good card. But I think it's going to be tight. Like, I think this is not the card where you want to be like, you know, leaving a bunch of salary on the table. Because like some of these favorites can put up high scores. So if they win, like, you're probably gonna have to have them in the lineup.
And a lot of the underdogs are not people that do put up big scores.
Yeah.
John, you'll have your takedown article tomorrow.
Yeah, probably. I'm going to aim for it today. We'll see. Because I got to start on the NBA stuff. So depending how quickly NBA goes, if we see some, like a really shocking 130 NBA injury report, I will probably have takedowns out tomorrow. If the NBA injury report is pretty clean, there's a good chance it'll be coming out tonight.
And today we'll have the Grounded Pound podcast with Liam and Mike, the expert survey, the breakdown article tomorrow. John, you'll be on crunch time with Mike tomorrow, right?
Yep. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of an early crunch time. I think we're doing crunch time in the like afternoon, maybe 3 o'clock. And whereas it's a pay-per-view card, going to be starting late, probably going to be a late night. So like I've noticed like some of the books have the like Sean O'Malley Vera fight for like Sunday listed, you know, cause it's probably going to start after midnight and then go for about an hour. So maybe a late night on Saturday night, but that's all right. You know, it's a pay-per-view card, so it should be an interesting one.
And if you want all of our premium content here at RotoGrinders, all of our MMA stuff, get the Combo Premium Package. Click on that link in the description. Get $10 off your first month. You'll get access to everything, Lineup HQ, our projections, our expert surveys, our SimLabs product, our simulation outputs, or everything. You get our everything. But since it is Freebie Friday, remember, in the beginning of the show, we spun that wheel. And if today, I'm assuming by now that whoever is administrating the site has clicked the switch, that you could use our fantasy pick'em tool today all day for free. So if you're playing on Prize Picks, on Underdog, on any of those types of sites, we do have a pick'em tool that compares our statistical projections, which get updated all the time throughout the day for all of the squares that are available on those sites. So you could see what the top edges are on Prize Picks for NHL, for NBA, for college basketball, for whatever we have up there. If you're playing an Underdog, DraftKings Pick 6, anything like that, try it out today. And if you do like it, right, that's part of our premium package. If you go premium Roto-Grinders, you get everything, right? Combo premium, it's a, here you go, smorgasbord, right? But if you just want to, you know, you're getting out of DFS, you know, maybe you only play MMA DFS and just like, I don't need a whole combo, whatever, but you still want to bet props and pick them on NBA and NHL and MLB that when it comes back, get our props and pick them package. It's much cheaper. You get access to our extra picks. You get access to the pick them tool. You get access to our prop model, top 20 prop model. And I mean, these are tools that I use profitably every single day. I mean, I use our projections in NHL, NBA. For the past 3 years, I've been profitable on Prize Picks and Underdog, and so far profitable in all the retail sports books. So come join me, and come join me in the Discord. We got the MMA channel there as well. Rotogrinders.com/Discord. John, can I promote anything else?
I think we're good.
Okay. Hit that thumbs up button. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. We'll be on later today. NBA Grinders Live, crunch time, and I'll be back on Monday. Talking about all things you're thinking about in daily fantasy, props and pick 'em on Roto Grinders today.